National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Red Jam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominic Ferguson, and my guest this evening is no stranger to Soul P Airwaves. She's been on before. She is Samaya Montola, born Samantha Hines. She's an artist in motion. Started with dance at a young age, and her love of music led her to singing and songwriting. Her diverse palette has brought her to many collabs in Montreal, like Jane Itai Lotus, Shashu, and MoFak. She is a member of Improv Collective Community for many years. She has taught and traveled through the medium of hip-hop dance and whacking. She's one of the first whackers and teachers of the style in Canada, known as Princess Shayla, as part of the crew, The Chapter. Soul, R&B, hip-hop, funk is where she likes to play around, not forgetting gospel in her teens with her Barbadian and Trinidadian heritage. Her last solo project, Intro to Indigo Mixtape, is where she explores recording and dives into producing, an homage to her inspirations in music styles, artists, and producers. It has been on Palmares A Disc Radio Campus list during the summer of 2019 and the Voix Projet de la Semaine. Her video, I Get My Funk, produced by MoFak, was a finalist in the People's Choice Awards 2019 for the Toronto Funk and Soul Festival. It was featured on Blogs, HWING, and Canadian Beats. In January 2022, the track was released on Potions Music NYC with a limited edition 7-inch vinyl. Sam, welcome, welcome, welcome to Soul P. How are you doing? Welcome back, rather, to Soul P. How are you doing?
Yeah. I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Hey, you know, this post-pandemic, during pandemic world is like a huge adjustment, you know, mm-hmm. but we'll figure it out. Still figuring it out, I feel like, because it's a weird time. But how has these last 2 years been for you? Like, I've been speaking to a lot of people, artists and non-artists alike, and I'm fascinated because some folks, you know, they had to like shut down. Like when the lockdown came, they had to shut down because things got really dark for them emotionally, mentally, so on and so forth. Like fear began to creep in because finances were in jeopardy and people were losing their jobs, but then artists were losing gigs. But then I also spoke to other artists who were like, oh man, the lockdown was amazing because now I'm actually an introvert. I didn't have to see anybody. I didn't have to talk to anybody. I was able to commit myself to my artwork, you know, so I had a lot of varied responses, which I'm really enjoying exploring and hearing. So yeah, what was your experience, you know, 2020, boom, that's the beginning of the lockdown. What was going on?
Definitely a lot of things. I can definitely relate on both sides to that. I've always been, I guess, a person that's always been in a lot of projects and a lot of different, obviously, collectives and places. But it definitely gave me the time to just relax, the time to just, like, take a moment. Of course, you know, when we don't have the stability as we had before, of course, there's that, a bit of that fear. And I think it's not natural. It's natural to have that response because it's something we've never, ever experienced before in our lives and probably never again, hopefully. but it definitely, for how I saw it, was like the whole world just shut down. Mm-hmm. Literally the whole world stopped. And for some people, it brought them to be extra active in terms of like, this was the time where they had so much space and time for themselves. So of course it was like really pro creative time. Right. And for others, you know, I think more like myself in the beginning, I really had to take a step back and really started sifting through to like what I guess wanted to do or how I wanted to proceed. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really rested for a long time, you know.
Right.
Either always through work, and then through work the time to bring in my creative projects or endeavors and trying to make space for everything at the same time. So for me, it was bittersweet in that sense. Like, of course, the security, the money, the, you know, knowing what's going to happen is obviously, I think not knowing that was obviously a bit of a scary point, but, on the other side, I think it was necessary for myself to be where I'm at right now.
Gotcha. Just generally speaking, people know that you're a dance teacher and that you're a singer-songwriter. Is there anything else that you do? Because some artists, you know, we got this full-time job that we do and then we do everything else full-time as well. But, you know, was there anything else that you were doing as well to complement it? Or are you like full-time into your artistry? Were you like full-time into your artistry?
At that time, not as full-time. I feel like I tackled it, as you said, everything full-time. So it was really like, the only social time I really had is when I was doing shows, and that's where I was around people, and then that's how I engaged with people. But I mean, I wasn't really the person that's out in the club and doing all these things on my own, because I was just I got things to do, I gotta be somewhere tomorrow, blah blah blah, you know. Last couple of years is my work in general was working in the community in Côte d'Ivoire.
Okay.
As an animator, also as a dance teacher, you know, performance and mentoring. So, which anybody who knows, of course, is definitely it's in a world by itself. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, which was good in a sense, because I still was connected to the fact that I was an artist. So I was able to bring my experience with youth, and you know, hopefully they gain something out of that. Mm-hmm. But of course, it still is another world compared to what I was doing, let's say, with my art or, you know, performing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And of course, before that, you know, I was working in the store downtown and you know, living on my own and trying to pay my bills, trying to pay my actual art as well, because that can be expensive. So I mean we're doing what we had to do to make things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How important is it for you to work with youth?
I think it's definitely very important. I think, and I'm, of course, we've heard it. I mean, it's not to sound cliche, of course, but, you know, I think they need to see examples. They need to see people who are actually actively doing it as well. Mm-hmm. So that they feel like, oh, if this person can do it, I can do it too.
Yeah.
And also bringing them in, because sometimes when we're doing work, they still might not, if they don't see, let's say, go to the shows or go to these things that, you know, when you have a certain connection with, you know, what you're doing, it I think that also helps. I'll be honest, it's very challenging.
Okay.
In a sense, it's challenging because, again, it can be emotionally and mentally very intense.
Okay.
And something that, again, you can bring hard to disconnect when you come home as well. Okay. So I think that.
No, I thought you were saying. No, I was saying okay, but I was wondering like how come it's. It becomes emotionally and mentally draining or taxing.
No, well, for me, it's about, how do I say? It's anything you're here to be present, or I don't know if I'm being very clear, or maybe I'm jumping this subject because I was like working with you, which isn't really important, but also it's.
Is it because like some of the
I don't know if I want to go there right now or if that makes sense right now for
okay.
me. Or
okay.
Maybe I'm just
No, because I think that it's important to work with youth. And what I liked that you said earlier that was really interesting is, you know, for them to see someone who's doing the art. And I was watching something, I think I was watching a YouTube video or maybe a documentary about And they call it the CSI effect, where you know there was a point in time in the late 90s to like I want to say up to the 2010s where like CSI was really popular. There was CSI and there was CSI Las Vegas and CSI Miami, mm-hmm. CSI New York, CSI all over the place. But in the CSI Miami series, what I really remembered is that some of the officers, some of the, the CSI folks, the ones that do the actual crime scene investigation, they showcase a lot of women in that position. And then what ended up happening within like a generation or so, like late teens and even younger teens, there started to be a lot more women who were, you know, applying for jobs as CSIs because during their youth they saw women in these positions and this it's a documentary on I believe it's Disney Plus because they were talking to Gina Davis and Gina Davis did she did a movie where she was an archer and then a bunch of movies came out, you know, Brave came out, the Hunger Games series came out, and there's a lot of archery, and so women became more and more involved in archery, and that documentary was focusing on the impact of certain groups seeing people doing a certain profession that they had never seen before, and then that becoming kind of like, okay, they can do that. So there's like a whole group, a whole generation of people who are able to grow and thrive into that because they see it, you know. And it's like I feel like that's going to start happening where you know we're going to see more black folks applying for the presidency in the United States because Obama's done it, and we're going to see more black women applying for the judge because there's I don't remember her name off the tip of my tongue right now, but there's this very influential black woman judge with dreadlocks who's very prominent. So now I feel like you're doing the same thing with the youth, right? By giving them someone who looks like them, sounds like them, talks like them, has lived in the same neighborhood maybe, even at a time, you know. It's motivation and inspiration by osmosis almost.
No, I mean, definitely. But again, that's it's about being ourselves and then being in the environment and showing that you're comfortable with what, where, who you are and how you're going through and going through the world, basically, you know what I mean? And I think that's important. I think it's important, but I think in general, just to make, be clear about what it was, just kind of, because being also, it's not just about showing up and saying, okay, here I'm an artist and here I do this and there I'm together. When you're working in, let's say, that sort of scenario, it's, again, you're giving a lot and you're not just that, you're what you do also becomes a bit of your life.
Yeah, working with youth is not just teaching them, especially in that sense. Like, you can, you have an opportunity to really influence them. A lot of the times you become, because I've worked with youth a lot. You know, when I came to Montreal, within a year I started tutoring after school programs, and then I became involved in, in, you know, like most of us, in involved in summer camp. And a lot of the times you spend more time with these kids than they do with their own parents.
And, of course,
you know, and then their phases are up and down. They have their good days, their bad days. And then sometimes one or two youth, you know, might be just carrying on a particular way. And you're like, there must be something deeper. And you sit down with them and you talk to them. And, like, they start telling you their story. And you're like, oh, you're like a guidance counselor, but you just don't have the qualifications of a guidance counselor, you know? And, like, I can kind of empathize in that it can be quite difficult if you're not able to detach, you know, okay, I put down, take off my hat of, I was this guidance counselor slash facilitator slash dancing teacher slash, you know, all of the different slashes. When I go home, you know, it's like, okay, I can let go. Some people, especially empathetic people,
which,
you know, it's like,
very,
it's hard
very,
to let go of that. Sometimes you don't even know where your emotion begins and their emotion ends. It's like, it just becomes very blurry.
Well, that's, I didn't want to necessarily go there necessarily, but that's definitely a big part of it. Dealing with a lot of emotions and figuring out what is yours and figuring how to be that that person for yourself and showing up and also be there for others showing up. And I, you know, I think that goes with all kinds of work. I mean, of course, we're talking about youth and how important, but any type of service, any sort of service that you're there being present. You know, and I think it's important to also be restorative and to restore what you need for yourself, so you can really show up for others. And for some, as you said, some people are very connected, or how do I say, not where I would say, I guess, more sensitive to their environments and how, and to other people, and maybe if they don't understand, can really like can really be can be, I guess, overwhelming for them. And for some people, it's not a big, huge deal, you know what I mean? Or they can handle that, or, you know what I mean? So it really comes down to each person and how they handle. But I think, like anything, of course, I mean, I was raised in Côte d'Ivoire. I know Côte d'Ivoire very well by just living here for a long time. And, you know, the community has changed obviously over since I was a kid, but St. Vincent still has that same sort of, like, you know, we have, it's great to have these resources, great to have different diverse people who are able to connect with the youth or to the community at large. I think that's really important, but it is a there's a lot that goes into, you know, and that has been also my learning journey as well. And so working with you, but in a different way, using my other aspects of dance and movement and even sound. So, mm-hmm. It definitely has taught me like ways of how I can also channel and give to others and now in the future, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go back a little bit. When did you first make that decision of, I want to be a performer?
I guess the definitive time would be when I was 12. But I mean, I started dancing since I, like, in terms of going to dance class. I mean, I danced when I was a baby and I just liked to dance in the house. But my first dance class was at age 5. So for me, from a very young age, I guess I learned how to present myself on stage at first more with movement. And when I was 12, I danced in front of my, my peers in when we went camping for the summer day camp, which was with the Black Community Center in Copenhague, and just dancing in front of them and they thought I was quiet. And then for, me bursting out.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, she could dance. She could actually do this.
Right. Yeah.
You know, she's actually good. And even in my grade 7 years of just being really shy, and then all of a sudden music playing and I just burst out dancing and they were just like, what?
So who is this person?
When that happened for me, it was like, oh, I'm good at something.
Yeah.
And it was exciting, you know, it was exciting to be able to do this and people enjoy it. So for me, that was probably more of like, okay, I think I would like to do this as like more often.
Nice. Nice. And what was that? Because it started off with dance and then you transitioned into incorporating the vocals. Mm-hmm. So when did that start to happen for you? When did you realize, oh, I got a voice and I want to pursue the voice as much as I'm pursuing the dance?
Well, I, again, always liked singing, always sang pretty much in the house with all, like, you know, like watching Michael Jackson, watching Prince, Jody Watley, and like trying to memorize the songs, sing them. And so singing for me was always something I did. I was very shy about it. I didn't do it. I was too shy to really sing in front of people, especially as a solo artist. I mean, artist. When I was like a kid, I was very self-conscious about my voice.
Okay.
But I really did like singing I did a lot of choir. So for me, I sang in the school choir, performed little gigs. And so for me, singing and music was always there, but as a solo person, I wasn't there yet. It took me a lot more it took me a lot to gain that confidence.
Okay.
And more so when I, more towards my late teens, singing more, being more with gospel and still wasn't as confident as probably you see me now. Was just like, I knew I wanted to sing. I knew I wanted to do this, but I was really like, can I, you know, can I?
Yeah.
Dancing for me, I think, was a bit natural because I didn't have to say anything.
Yeah, that's what I was
just
thinking,
I just had to do something and be good at it. And it's still a personal connection, obviously. But I think the voice and singing, or just voice in general, is very personal. Each person has a very unique sound to them.
Yeah.
And I felt very vulnerable when I started really saying, okay, I think I'm going to try being solo, but it took me a very long time to really feel confident, you know, in myself, yeah, I just felt naked. I don't know, like, I guess that, you know, for others, again, would be like, oh, yeah, I was doing this. And I mean, singing and music was always there and I always enjoyed it. But if you're talking about, like, pushing as a solo artist.
Shining the spotlight on yourself.
It's like, it's just felt like I was, people would see everything in me, like, see what's inside and, like, you know,
it's like, a very unnerving feeling. Yeah. And like with dance, you can hide behind the choreography. You can hide behind your, if you're dancing in a group, you can hide behind, and I say hide behind, but in a metaphorical sense of like, you're part of an ensemble. And even when you're singing in a choir, like you can do that hiding where, even if they ask you to come up and do a little segment, do like maybe a hook or even a verse, you still have the support of, you know, 50 people behind you just hyping you up. Whereas when you know, like Nas says, all I have is one mic. That's just you. That's different. There's no hiding. You can pay attention to the people in the back because they're moving. No, it's like, boom. It's a very, very unnerving thing. I think people who see people who've been performing for a long time, it's like, oh, it's so easy. It's like, no, you don't know. Sometimes, you know, bricks, we are, I can't say the word, but, you know, you go into the bathroom and it's bricks coming out because you're so nervous. But yeah, I want us to get into that a little bit more, but we do have to take a break. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, you're listening to Soul Perspectives. We're going to play some music, pay some bills. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Knows who they are, not afraid, and that's a fact. And yes, I said it, conceal what they're dressing, and whenever I feel it, it will be a blessing. Ain't personal, it's not you. Doesn't need you to tell her what to do. Go show your life. It's what's gonna keep you in the night, yeah.
Yes, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Our guest this evening is Samayam Montola. The year 2020 was a learning and progressive year for Samayam, continuing on her journey in beat production, which opened her up to new ways of making music and writing music, showing her chops as a beat maker for the 25th anniversary of Girls Action in collaboration with the Lotus Collective. She was a guest performer for the Hub City Music Festival based in New Jersey. And in 2021, she performed at the Swoney TV Times XCCOV Music and Dance Festival. Oh my God, I don't even... I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm so sorry. This is terrible. I'm a terrible host this evening. What's the name of the festival, please? So I don't mess it up anymore.
Move, Swanee, move.
In French. Sam, we were talking about your origins as a dancer turned singer. And, like, I always find that fascinating because before the break, we were talking about the fact that that you know, it's a very difficult thing to like put yourself in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to work in a group. It's one thing to be choreographed by someone else, and the responsibility of the performance lies in part, in large part, with other folks. But then now you're writing your own music, you're singing in front of a crowd. Take us through what went through your head back then. Like when you were first like, okay, I'm going to go up on stage. I'm going to do my thing. What was going through your mind before you hit the stage?
I mean, I'm going to say, first and foremost, well, first, I mean, I know that for how it looks from the outside, I was a dancer first, but I do believe I was a musical being first and foremost. And I just chose dance as a medium to push more at that point in time in my life because it felt comfortable and I felt good to share in that way. But before I could say that I came before stage, I mean, depending. I mean, I felt there's moments where you feel very pumped. I mean, it depends on where you are with the piece that you're about to perform as well. If you feel like it was a rush thing and you're like, all right, let's just do it. Let's just go with it. And but it I think it always came out exciting. I think, you know, no matter how many times you go on stage, doesn't necessarily mean that you're like, oh, I got this. You always have these sort of butterflies or, you know, this kind of hyper awareness that you're about to just do something and you don't know what's really going to happen, even if you practice how many times, or, you know, you're with all these people, you still know, like there's this sort of special spontaneity is going to happen, as you hit the stage. I mean, yeah, that's kind of most part. I mean, there's moments where I've been, I wouldn't say scared, but just be like, you know, am I ready? You know, and but you just go with it. And usually in terms of performance, like, you know, or I guess speak for myself, but for, I'm sure others, it's like when you go in to perform, you just, okay, I'm about to do this. And you just hit to a mind state of like, I'm just going to go with it and just roll with it. Even if you're just not sure what's going to happen. So I think naturally right before, that's kind of what goes on, because without that, then, you know, then that's when your mind and your brain starts thinking all kinds of stuff. And then you're, you know.
Man, for me personally, I've been performing since I was like 10. And every time that I can remember, I'm now 42 years old this year, I'm always nervous before I get on that stage. Like, I have, back when I used to drink, I used to have my two rum and cokes before I get on the stage. Now I don't drink, so and it's not good to drink before you perform anyway, because it just does something. There's a negative effect. Some people, they have to drink, and like that's their thing, and they're able to perform better. But I find that I perform better without the drink. But I'm still, there's the heart rate spikes, and you go and it's going. But then there's this very surreal feeling that happens when, like, okay, right before I'm going on the stage, you know, the knees weak, arms are heavy, vomit on that, the whole, you know, palms are sweaty, all of that. And then as soon as I touch the stage, it's like zen. Everything just, all of that just falls away. You reach up to the microphone. And me, I'm a huge proponent of, like, take your time. That audience ain't going nowhere. Just like, it's not like Zoom where someone will turn off their thing and go on about their business. When you're in front of an audience, a live audience, they're not going anywhere. And you have them in your hand just by standing there. And then you just rip through the piece. It's a surreal spiritual experience that I feel like Zoom performance has taken that away to a large extent. And live performance can never be replaced. Like, never. It's just, to me, it's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful feeling. So, what? How many albums do you have? I want to know how many albums you have. Because I asked you before we started the show, and you just kind of went, psst. And I'm like, this one probably have like 20-some-odd albums.
Not even. You know, I mean, I'm working
trying to catch
on
up to Tupac.
No. I'm working on my, I guess, my third project. I guess my real would be a second album in essence, because okay. The last one was a mixtape, so that was just more of a introduction.
What's the difference between a mixtape and an album?
Well, the mixtape for me was like I was influenced by different beats and styles that and basically rearranging it to create songwrite over it and sing over it. So it wasn't to say okay. like an album where I was like, you know, building from scratch and everything. It was really like how MCs would be like, yo, I like to rap on this beat. I'm going to rap on this beat and create it and just have it as an artistic showcase
okay.
or
so
show,
like,
you know?
So like taking so, Nas's, yeah. the beat of Nas is like, I know I am. I know I can be what I want to yeah. be. And then singing and
yeah it's I mean it's like it's
over.
Like yeah when you think of MCs like rappers on mixtapes it's not their album
right?
It's yeah. it's really them just showcasing you know what they're about and in that way it's also kind of showing people what their style is and what their influences are right
yeah
so it's kind of even though it's not that's how I see it anyway. It's kind of like a dope mashup as well. You okay. know what I mean? And yeah, I like yeah. the idea of those sort of like mixing. Cause again, even though I'm not an MC, right. I did hip hop dance. I do hip hop dance. So like the idea of it and R&B is so obviously connected to hip hop generally. So yeah. it just made a lot of sense. For me, I tend to like singing on hip hop beats as well a lot. So mm-hmm. It just felt like a fun, creative project for me to do and in a way brought me kind of back into the creation. As I said, my last album, my first, I could say EP mainly, was back in 2014 with Made Her. Mm-hmm. And that was a collab with me and Shashu. So he created the beats and I sang and wrote. And
you still play those songs on Soul Peace, so yeah.
Still and supporting so, that. So again, the next project, I mean, I haven't really put out anything for like 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
So for me, it was like a way to kind of step kind of back in the full sense. And also touching on producing, again, still figuring out what all that was. But it was a way for me to kind of say, you know what, I'm just going to do something because I like to challenge myself and say, if I have a goal and mark, I'm just going to do it. You know, instead of it, if I don't have a goal or anything, then it's kind of like, oh, I'm just playing around. Mm-hmm. So the mixtape for me was kind of a way to kind of focus and center my creativity. Mm-hmm. And with obviously the inspiration of the certain beats, obviously when you hear it, you know, you're going to hear a J Dilla beat, you're going to hear this and that. But it's the way it was arranged, it's the way I've written it, it's the way I even, you know, added maybe certain effects and whatnot. And that was my way of touching on producing without to say, like, I have this huge, huge mountain to try to climb because I'm trying to do all these things. It was just yeah. really me, like, I want to be creative and I just want to see how those mashups can really work and as well showcase my influences and what I like in a regular basis, you know, with different artists. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so now working on creating my own beats using, you know, again, with a lot of hip hop ideas like sampling and whatnot, but really now very hands-on and I'm just on that process of now recording, writing the tracks. Some of them are pretty more there than others, but really wanting to get that very, very soon by the time, you know, I think for sure this fall would be something where it would be manifested in there. That's the goal.
Okay.
And aiming for maybe about eight tracks.
Okay.
You know, so really like a full project. So
it's a full album. And it's an LP.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And just really pushing myself in that way, being creative. I have all these ideas in my head, and sometimes, you know, it's just about doing it and seeing where it goes. So that's been, I mean, I've always been collaborating, of course. Like, I've always been in different, either other people's albums or their singles. So in terms of being active, mm-hmm. I've always kind of, like, throughout the years, it's been always connecting with other artists, which mm-hmm. I think I really like as well. Just because it's fun to hear other people and really mesh and see the magic between the people. And I think it's important in that way. Get that. Yeah.
Yeah. What is your creative process look like? Because we've talked to some folks, some musicians, and, you know, sometimes they need to like hunker down and just like be in front of a pen and pad with a beat. And then they just write. You know, and other people have different ways, but what's your creative process like?
It depends, of course, if the beat is already made, then writing and figuring out the melody is like next. That's when the beat is already made and you could kind of just dabble. And sometimes you're recording melodies without the words. Sometimes the melody comes first and that's what you roll with first. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you already have one line that you know, okay, this song feels like it's talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to roll with this theme. So like usually that was what happens when it comes to, I guess, beats, where I'm learning also my own way of like how that kind of comes about. I just try to figure out the rhythm and just figure out like the rhythm and maybe just could be starting with a loop and just seeing where that grows. But really from the writing perspective, melodies usually come first, melodies and maybe just the concept of what it is. Because sometimes the song doesn't have words, but you feel that it talks about this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain songs that is going to probably feel more like love, for example, and some that are going to still feel more like you're talking about, I don't know, family or what you've been through. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, I feel more instinctively, okay, what's the mood for each one? So that too is a factor.
Mm-hmm. And... what happens when you don't have the beat and you want to compose the song first? Has that ever happened? Is that something that you've done?
It can happen. The one time it ever happened was Woman's Curse.
Okay.
Where I knew the melody already before the beat was created, which is a very challenging. It's possible, obviously the song's out there.
And yeah, of course.
It's only challenging in a way where, because I heard it in my head and mm-hmm. I heard it how it is, but then I was trying to translate it to, let's say, Shashu.
Right.
And as well as he obviously understood, you know, and we went back and forth, but it wasn't like an easy, like, oh yeah, I get it. Da, 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 da. Oh, it's here. It's right. it was a really a lot of back and forth because it was kind of like he was trying to read what it is that I was hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it can happen, but it's not something that I would necessarily do unless I feel like as if I myself is doing it, maybe mm-hmm. it would make more sense. And like in terms of if I hear the melody, if I hear already the beat to go with it, then something like, okay, well, at least I can lay those foundations
mm-hmm.
and then come with the, but it's,
so do you think that now
it can be challenging, you know what I mean? Unless there has to be one element, at least I think, but as I said, there's no wrong or right way to do anything.
No, absolutely. Do you think that now that you're more diving into the beat making aspect of it, that say 2, 3, 4 years down the line, maybe you have something that you wrote and you're like, oh, I have the beat in my head, but you're going to work with a producer. Do you think that now that you're kind of diving into the beat production, you'll be able to better communicate with another producer as to what it is that you want? Because I find that like if you as a writer have a good understanding of the musicality aspect, even if it's like you record yourself going, you know, like to have that knowledge and being like, okay, this is how I want the beat to kind of sound like. It's easier to translate than if you have like no instrumentation knowledge and you just have the written words. It's harder to like articulate. Like, it's just like if you're speaking a different language, if you don't have that mm-hmm. language, the understanding, at least the foundation of the language, there's no way that you're going to be able to communicate with the other person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, exactly. you answered that succinctly in one word. Absolutely. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Samaya Montola. She came on to Soul P back in 2014, 2015, and shared with us her album Made Her, which was her debut album, EP,
mm-hmm.
Which we still play on the air, which you're probably going to hear tonight. We do have to take a quick break. You're listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Samaya Montola, a.k.a. Samantha Hines, who's an artist in motion, started dancing very, very young, and her love of music led her to singing and songwriting, collaborations with all kinds of folks across Montreal and beyond. And she was also teaching, back in the day, hip-hop dance and whacking. And Sam, while, you know, you and I, we've talked often, I've been to a lot of whacking shows, so I know what whacking is. I have a good understanding and visualization. You obviously know what it is because you've performed it and you've taught it. But for the folks who may not know, what is whacking? What is this style of dance?
So, in, I guess, simplest terms, I mean, whacking, you can visualize whacking of the arms. So, like, the actual action of whacking is using our arms, using it with the musicality and the touches on posing. It's an art form of expression, and it's heavily used with disco music, soul music, R&B in the day. We don't know the exact age or exact time that it was born, per se, but it's definitely through the late 60s into the 70s. You see the original whackers who performed the Diana Ross,
mm-hmm.
For example, who basically created the style. And we're all very different, each and every one of them. But mainly it was about using the arms, using artistry, using pose. And it's about basically accepting your authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
Again, predominantly these creators were Black gay men, or even Black brown men. And again, this is basically the dance that had them have freedom of expression. So this was a very underground as well dance. This wasn't something that, you know, at that time, of course, people didn't feel that comfortable being that open. And this was, you could say, a dance that was able to express that in any, however they felt they wanted to express. So this is, again, a club style. And now we could say it's very international. We see it in different countries now through a lot of pioneers who have traveled and taught. I was lucky and fortunate enough to learn from one of the main pioneers, by Tyrone Proctor, who was one of the Soul Train dancers. And again, yeah, it's a dance style that now you could see all kinds of people, all races. I guess more now, a lot of females, a lot of women are doing whacking, yeah. But it's considered basically a gay male dance from the black community.
That's how it originated.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So it was born, or at least, at the very least, came to prominence in like the 70s disco era.
Yeah, this is where you see the true representation of the style. Mm. You see it on Soul Train, as I said. You see it on performances with Diana Ross. When you hear "I'm Coming Out," it's basically the track that very much epitomizes the this anthem. Whole movement.
That's the whacking
anthem in that way,
right?
Yeah, like and so. It's been here through the years, but it obviously has its ups and downs in mm-hmm. terms of visibility, but yeah.
Yeah. And why I ask you about this is because the first time that I saw you, I believe it was at either a whacking competition where you were one of the guest performers or something like that. Then I saw you at Community after. So my introduction to you was literally how your art forms came about through your life, your dance first and then mm-hmm. I saw you sing. So I thought it was important that we highlight that. And whacking is, it fascinates me. I'm always fascinated with movement and dance and how people use their bodies to express themselves. And there was a whacking competition, I want to say back in the day, but it wasn't that far back. Leah McFly, Wakisha, was the judge. And mm-hmm. It was at Chez Mado. Is it Chez Mado or Mado's?
So you probably saw the Hot Mess.
Pardon me?
Yeah, okay.
Pardon me?
I'm wondering if it was the event Hot Mess.
That I was trying to find the name Hot Mess. And I remember I was standing there and I was just fascinated by everybody's doing the same style. But every person, like, there was no, okay, everybody, okay, I saw that. There was no sense mm-hmm. of, like, oh, Lord, I'm seeing this again and again and again. It was, like, each person, even though the basics were similar, each person took mm-hmm. it and did something completely different. At one point, I remember somebody had a tail. Preach was in that competition as well. He was dressed in all white and he had like flares where there were things that were flaring off of his pants. And that was it was just so fascinating for me to like see all of that. And then as it evolved, I'd see friends doing other things. I think it's the L drop or something like that, where they're whacking, spin in a circle and then bam, fall on their back. One leg straight out, one leg kind of...
Oh, that's voguing. That's another style. But, okay. You know, and just so you know, Preach, for the record, was Abba and Preach. It's not Preach Matthews.
Pardon me?
Because I was saying, you said Preach, but I'm like, we know two Preaches. So I was like...
Yes. Right, not Preach and Phobia. not Preach and Phobia. Preach from the Abba and Preach YouTube team. But yeah, I just find all of it. And isn't Vogue and whacking kind of within the same... Am I mistaken by thinking that they come from the same kind of... Are born out of the same...
Yeah, because it's not the same milieu of, you know, like... Voguing, it has its own vocabulary, its own style.
Okay.
Obviously, what's very, very similar or common is the fact that they're both considered gay dances, both, you know, mm-hmm. Black gay dances. Mm-hmm. I would say whacking is a little earlier because of disco. Disco is definitely a lot earlier than like the house and the ball scene. The ball scene is a little bit later, I believe. And again, not exactly, it's throwing out here, but late 70s into the 80s, more like New York. The New York scene, of course, you have like more the East Coast like house scene and stuff, whereas whacking is, it's really, if you're going to put demographics, it's like we see it more from the West, like California, Soul Train.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? So it's similar in a way because it has draws from certain inspiration. But again, it's two different styles.
It's still
styles
two
of
different
dance.
Complete.
They have different vocabularies. Okay. Yeah.
Why? Because like I see, I guess my eye is just not trained enough to know the difference, but I brought those two together was because I saw similarities in the hand movements, right? The mm-hmm. the circular hand movements coming to the shoulder, out, moving around, and like I can't do it, but I saw the similarities there, which is why I thought that they were interconnected.
Yeah, I mean it's with any history there's just a lot of factors
and there's a lot of crossover as well.
Crossovers.
Yeah.
But it's like it's also difficult when like we don't have connection really to the original people who created it as mm-hmm. well, even from when I started, sadly either they passed on or we just don't know where they are. So the people sometimes that would be great to have these real conversations with, sadly we don't have that connection necessarily.
Yeah. And there wasn't YouTube at those times to like record everything and just upload it somewhere to keep that historical archive.
Yeah, but even then, 2000, like when I started in 2007, 2006, 2007, I mean, YouTube was hardly anything.
Yeah.
And all our information was from the people that we learned from face to face. So yeah. It's kind of like hearing the story from the person who has lived their life. Now we have, I guess, obviously information age, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, again, when we think of like, you know, when you think of the rolling of the arms, like we could also even think like, well, locking does the rolling of the arms. And but it's a specific
it's
dance style.
Specific,
and you definitely see it a lot in Soul Train. And, you know, that style, for example, was considered like the first, like, you could say like,
first iteration
hip-hop style showcase, like on TV, like. Mm-hmm. No question, you know,
right.
Like in terms of freestyle. But yeah, like it could, I mean, as I said, who knows? Because it could have been some sort of crossover, but from what we are shown, it's like one specific thing. And I mean, the voguing is like, it's super huge. There's so many, there's like categories. It's such a, you know, a world.
Right. It's a world.
You know,
on its
and
own.
Of course, a lot of dancers do both, you know. Mm-hmm. There is people who do one over the other, but of course it's always about, you know, making sure we're like I guess in terms of battling or whatever, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, there's certain styles that you don't cross over, right?
Yeah.
But it's dances.
It's just like crump is very distinctly different from breakdancing, you know. So it's like keeping those two styles separate and apart. I did have one of the things that I'm keen on is I notice similarities. So I love to like, because I believe that there is, I think I've spoken about this on the show before. There is like a huge idea verse. So there's the universe and then there's the idea verse. And the idea verse is literally ideas floating around and people have access to them. Anybody, doesn't matter your race, age, gender, etc. You have access to them and you can pull on them. If you can do something with them, but know that somebody else also has access to those same ideas and the creative thought. And I believe that because we are all interconnected as humans, you're going to see things that are created on one side of the planet and that something almost very, very similar will happen on the other side of the planet. Mm-hmm. And like, oftentimes people, I've seen this a lot lately where people are like, oh, someone stole my style or they stole my this. And I'm just like, it's such a hard thing to prove because, again, my theory of the ideaverse is like, there are mm-hmm. ideas out there. Yes, we can draw influence from other people, but sometimes there are people who they've never seen each other. They've never touched each other's, you know, Instagrams or YouTube or whatever. And they just end up doing something that's so, so similar. I mean, that's why like people like Vanilla Ice get away with Highway Murder because he added two extra beats to his song. You know, like the I don't know if you know, but he was being sued by another creator because he changed something very slight, but the whole beat was the same. It's like he added two, like there was a ding 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 ding. Dun, dun.
Yeah.
And then he added a ding, 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 and it's like, bro, come on. But I'm talking in terms of dance and like when there's completely different countries, it's just fascinating to me how like things are interconnected yet they're still different.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're talking about different places. You're talking about different people, their personalities. You're talking about different music, you know, because again, a lot of movement, of course, can look very similar whether you change the style of music. So you might be doing one move and then you change the style of music, it looks different, or you switch out how you're executing that movement. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I just did a performance two weeks ago at La Chapelle for this piece by Solvay.